Okay, let's unpack this. That feeling you get when university starts and suddenly it's not just about classes.
Right.
There's this whole other world, isn't there? Tuition, financial aid, how to actually, you know, pay for it all.
It can definitely feel like a lot at first.
Yeah.
Like you need some kind of map.
Exactly. Like needing a secret decoder ring for your bill or your aid package. If that sounds familiar, trust me, you're not alone. We know you as a learner want to get a handle on this without getting totally overloaded.
And that's precisely our aim today.
Uh-huh.
We want this deep dive to be your sort of insider's guide to managing university finances with confidence. We've dug into the university's info on billing, financial aid, student jobs,
mm-hmm.
to pull out the essentials for you. Really mm-hmm. aiming for clarity, practical advice, things you can actually use.
Absolutely. So we'll be covering things like, you know, accepting your aid package, understanding scholarships versus loans.
Right.
Making sense of the actual bill, housing costs, dining plans, and even how to find work on campus. Think of it as a complete roadmap.
And a really important point up front. You're not expected to figure this all out in isolation. The university has the Solution Center.
Ah, yes. Good point.
You're kind of the go-to hub for, well, almost everything. Financial aid, advising, housing, billing questions. Super helpful.
Good to know. How do you reach them?
Easy. You can email them at solutioncenter@lynchburg.edu or just give them a call. 434-544-8210. Definitely keep that info handy.
Okay, great. So let's say you get that good news, your financial aid is approved. That's fantastic, but what's next? It's not automatic, right?
That's a crucial point.
Okay.
Approval is just the first step. You actually have to formally accept it.
And how do you do that?
You need to head over to the MyHive portal. That's the online system you'll use for a lot of things.
Okay, MyHive. Got it.
Once you log in, look for the financial aid section. In there, you'll see your entire award package laid out, grants, loans, everything.
And you can see the amounts and details there.
Exactly. And importantly, it will also flag any outstanding documents or requirements they still need from you. So you need to check that carefully.
Right. So it's not just seeing the money. It's like an active step. You review it, make sure everything looks right.
And then you actively accept, or, you know, you could decline parts of it if you wanted to, like maybe a specific loan.
Okay. And you mentioned missing paperwork shows up there too.
Yep. MyHive makes it pretty clear if there's anything you still need to submit, don't skip checking that section.
Good tip. Now, what if you accept something, say a loan, and then your situation changes? Maybe you get an unexpected scholarship. Can you change your mind?
You can. Things happen. If you need to adjust an aid decision you've already submitted, the best route is to contact the Solution Center directly.
Ah, back to the Solution Center.
Yep. Send them an email, solutioncenter@lynchburg.edu, or call them 434-544-8210. They can guide you through making changes.
Okay, that's good to know there's flexibility. Now, accepting aid is one thing, but keeping it, that involves something called SAP, Satisfactory Academic Progress.
Yes, SAP.
Yeah.
It sounds a bit formal, but it's basically about making sure you're, well, making satisfactory progress towards your degree. It's a way to ensure financial aid supports students who are actively succeeding.
So what does that involve? Is it just about grades?
Grades are a big part of it, yes. And interestingly, the required GPA actually changes a bit. Like, once you've earned 90 or more credit hours, you need to keep at least a 2.0 GPA.
Okay.
And for graduate students, the bar is higher, a 3.0. It kind of scales up as you advance.
That makes sense. It reflects the increasing challenge.
Exactly. It's about responsible use of funds, making sure the aid is going to students demonstrably moving towards graduation.
Is it only grades, though?
No, there's another piece. Course completion. You need to successfully complete at least 67%, two-thirds, basically, of all the courses you attempt.
Attempt. So that includes classes you withdraw from.
It does. Withdrawals, fails, even courses you repeat, they all count towards that 67% calculation. So you need to keep that completion rate in mind.
Okay. So GPA and completion rate. Anything else for SAP?
One more element, time frame. There's a maximum limit on the number of credit hours you can attempt while still receiving aid. Generally, it's 150% of the total credits needed for your specific degree program.
Right. So you can't just keep taking classes indefinitely with financial aid.
Pretty much. It encourages timely completion and ensures resources are available for everyone.
Okay. So what if you don't meet these SOP standards? Maybe you have a tough semester. Is your aid just cut off immediately?
Not usually right away. The first step is often what's called a financial aid warning.
A warning.
Yeah. If your GPA or completion rate drops below the standard, you'll likely get this warning. Your academic advisor will probably reach out too. It's always good to talk to them proactively anyway.
So the warning gives you a chance to improve.
Exactly. It's basically a heads up. You typically have the next semester to get back into good standing academically.
But what if you can't? Maybe something significant happened that affected your studies.
That's where the appeal process comes in. If there were extenuating circumstances, serious illness, family emergency, that sort of thing that impacted your ability to meet SAP, you can appeal the loss of your aid.
How does that work? Who do you talk to?
You'll need to connect with the Solution Center again. They'll explain the process. You'll likely need to provide documentation about your situation.
Okay.
The Financial Aid Office then reviews your appeal. They often consult with your professors and advisor to get the full picture.
And what are the possible outcomes of an appeal?
Two main possibilities. If your appeal is approved, you'll likely be placed on financial aid probation.
Probation.
Yeah, it means you get your aid back for that semester, but you'll have specific academic conditions you need to meet to continue receiving it in the future.
And if the appeal is denied?
If it's denied, unfortunately, you won't be eligible for aid for the following semester. You'd need to improve your grades on your own, paying out of pocket or finding other means, before you can potentially regain eligibility later.
Okay, that's really important to understand. Are there deadlines for filing an appeal?
Yes, definitely note these down. For the fall semester, the appeal deadline is typically September 1st.
September 1st for fall.
And for the spring semester, it's usually January 18th. Missing those deadlines means you likely miss your chance to appeal for that term.
Got it. Fall. September 1st, spring, mm-hmm. January 18th. Okay, another scenario. What happens if a student withdraws from classes or even leaves the university entirely partway through a semester?
Yes, that has significant financial aid implications, especially if it happens before completing 60% of the semester.
60%? Why that number?
It's tied to federal regulations. If you receive federal financial aid and withdraw before the 60% mark, the university is often required by law to return a portion of those funds to the U.S. Department of Education.
Return funds? So you might owe money back?
Potentially, yes. It's called the Return of Title IV Funds Calculation. Essentially, your aid eligibility gets recalculated or prorated based on how much of the semester you actually completed.
So, like, if you complete only 30% of the semester,
you might only be considered eligible for 30% of the federal aid you were initially awarded for that term. The rest might have to be returned.
Wow. Which types of aid does this affect?
This applies to the major federal programs. Federal direct subsidized and unsubsidized loans, federal Pell Grants, federal CEO grants, and federal Parent Plus Us loans.
So pretty much all the main federal aid. That's a huge consideration before withdrawing.
Absolutely. It underscores the importance of talking to your advisor and maybe the Solution Center before making a decision to withdraw so you understand the potential financial consequences.
So the big takeaway here seems to be stay informed, talk to advisors, professors.
Definitely. And here's a vital pro tip weaving through all of this.
Yeah.
Check your MyHive portal regularly. Seriously. Make it a habit.
Why so often?
Because that's where everything updates. Your aid acceptance status, any outstanding requirements, mm-hmm. payment deadlines, SAP status. It's your central dashboard for all things financial.
Okay, solid advice. Check MyHive often. Let's do a quick check-in. Where do you find all your financial aid info and actually accept or cancel your aid? A, Solution Center, B, Registrar, C, Financial Aid Office, or D, MyHive.
That's definitely D, MyHive. Your primary online portal.
Got it. And, true or false, you can give someone else, like a parent, proxy access to help manage your financial aid stuff in MyHive.
That is true. You can set up proxy access. It's super useful if family members are helping you out.
And that ties into FERPA privacy rules, right? Giving them official permission.
Exactly. A FERPA protects your educational records, including financial aid. Proxy access is the formal way you grant permission for someone else to view that specific information.
Okay, great. Let's switch gears a bit and talk about funding sources.
Yeah.
Scholarships, grants, and loans. They all sound like ways to get money for school, but they're different, aren't they?
Very different. And understanding the distinctions is key to making smart choices about financing your education. Let's start with scholarships.
Okay, scholarships. What's the main idea there?
Scholarships are typically awarded based on merit or specific criteria. Mostly for undergraduates. Think academic achievements, the leadership skills, maybe involvement in certain activities.
So based on what you've done or qualifications?
Right. Could be strong grades, volunteer work, maybe you wrote a great essay, belong to a certain demographic group. The criteria can vary a lot.
Where do students usually find these?
The university's financial aid office is a good starting point. They know about institutional scholarships. Also, the U.S. Department of Labor has a free online search tool that's a great resource for finding scholarships from all over.
And the best part about scholarships?
They generally don't need to be paid back. That's the headline. It's essentially free money towards your education.
Free money is good. Okay, now grants. How are they different from scholarships?
They're similar in that grants also usually don't require repayment. So also free money, which is great.
Okay.
But the main difference is that grants are often need-based rather than purely merit-based.
Need-based, meaning based on financial situation.
Exactly. Eligibility often considers factors like your family's income, the size of your family, things like that, usually determined by your FAFSA information.
Are there any big-name grants students might recognize?
The federal Pell Grant is probably the most well-known need-based federal grant.
Okay.
And it's good to know that when you're accepted to the university, you're automatically considered for a university-wide grant based on the info you provided. Plus, Virginia residents might qualify for the Virginia Tuition Assistance Grant VTAG if they're enrolled full-time.
So grants are another awesome way to lower costs without debt. Now, loans. This is where things change, right?
This is the crucial difference. Loans must be paid back, usually with interest added on.
Right. Repayment is the key word. Are there different kinds of loans?
Yes. Broadly, two main types you'll encounter.
Mm-hmm.
First, federal direct student loans. These come from the government.
What's good about those?
They often have lower fixed interest rates compared to private loans. And a big plus, repayment is typically deferred, meaning you don't have to start paying them back until after you graduate or leave school.
Okay, that helps. And sometimes the government even pays the interest while you're in school for subsidized loans.
Exactly. For subsidized loans, the government covers the interest while you're enrolled at least half-time. For unsubsidized loans, interest starts accruing right away, even while you're in school, though you don't usually have to pay it until later.
Gotcha. What's the other type of loan?
The other category is alternative or private loans. These come from banks, credit unions, or other private lenders.
And the catch there?
They can sometimes have variable or higher interest rates. And importantly, some might require you to start making payments while you're still in school. So you really, really need to read the fine print and understand the terms before signing up for a private loan.
Okay, definitely pays to be careful there. Quick quiz to lock this in. Question one, which of these usually requires repayment? A, scholarships, B, loans, or C, grants?
That would be B, loans. Loans mean repayment.
And question two, which type is typically merit-based and doesn't need repayment? A, scholarships, B, grants, or C, loans?
That's A, scholarships. Merit-based, free money.
Perfect. Okay, let's get practical now. Paying the actual university bill, where does the student go for that?
You guessed it, back to the MyHive portal. It really is the central hub for almost all your student financial transactions.
Okay, so MyHive for billing too. Can you walk us through the steps in MyHive to view and pay?
Sure. Once you're logged into MyHive, you'll look for the student finance area.
Student finance, okay.
Then click on account summary. That should show you your current balance and allow you to select the bill you want to pay. From there, it's usually just following the on-screen prompts to make the payment.
Pretty straightforward. What payment methods does MyHive accept online?
Through the portal, you can use credit cards, debit cards, or electronic checks, also known as e-checks, basically paying directly from your bank account.
Any fees involved?
Yes, this is important. If you pay online with a credit card through MyHive, there's typically a 2.75% transaction fee added.
Ooh.
However, there's usually no fee if you use a debit card or an e-check online. And interestingly, if you call the solution center and pay with a credit card over the phone, they often don't charge that fee. So that's a potential workaround.
Good insider tip. What about paying in person? Is that an option?
It is. You can go directly to the solution center. They're on the second floor of Drysdale Student Center.
And what can you use there?
In person, they can take cash, debit cards, credit cards, and good old-fashioned paper checks made out to the university.
Any other ways to pay, like wire transfers or special accounts?
Yep. Wire transfers are possible, though they can take a couple of business days to process, so plan ahead for deadlines.
Okay.
And many families use 529 savings accounts. You can definitely use funds from a 529 plan to pay the university bill. You'd usually arrange that through your 529 plan provider.
Right. Now, we touched on proxy access earlier for financial aid. Can you set that up for billing, too? Like, can a parent see the bill and pay it?
Absolutely. That's a very common use for proxy access. Parents or guardians helping with the bills often get set up as proxies.
And it gives them permission to see the financial details, bypassing FERPA restrictions because the student granted access.
Precisely. it's the student giving explicit permission for that specific person to view and potentially act on their billing information.
How does a student actually set that up in MyHive?
It's pretty easy. Mm. Log in, click your name, usual top right corner.
Okay.
Then look for an option like View Add Proxy Access. You'll probably see a drop-down menu where you can choose Add Another User.
Then you put in their info.
Yep, fill in their name, email, relationship to you, that sort of thing. Then comes the important part, specifying what they can access.
Ah, so you control the permissions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can check boxes for specific areas like billing and payments, maybe financial aid, grades, etc. Or there might be an option to allow complete access.
Okay. Then what?
You'll need to read and agree to a disclosure agreement, check a box saying you authorize it, and hit submit.
And does the proxy get notified?
Yes. They'll get an email, maybe takes a few hours confirming they've been added, then usually a follow-up email with instructions on how they can set up their own login to access the information you granted them.
Can you change those permissions later?
You can. You should be able to go back into the proxy settings, find their name under active proxies, and there's usually a little icon, like a pencil, to edit their access levels or remove them if needed.
Okay, good control there. Billing quiz time. Which of these is not accepted for payment directly through the MyHive portal? A, credit card. B, debit card. C, money order. Or D, electronic check.
The one not accepted online via the portal is C, money order. You'd likely need to bring that in person or mail it.
Right. And true or false, you can use funds from a 529 savings account to pay your university bill?
That is true. 529s are a very common way to handle university expenses.
Okay, let's talk housing and meal plans. Are those billed separately or?
Good news here. Nope. Housing charges and your meal plan costs are rolled right into your main university bill.
Oh, that's convenient.
Yeah, it simplifies things. Tuition, fees, room, board. It all appears on one statement that you pay through MyHive at the beginning of each semester.
And a key reminder, they don't mail paper bills, right?
Correct. No paper bills in the mail. You absolutely have to keep an eye on MyHive for notifications that your bill is ready.
So the process is the same. Log into MyHive, student finance, account summary, pay the total amount shown.
Exactly the same process. You'll get an alert in MyHive. You log in, find the bill under student finance, and follow the steps to pay the full balance, which includes tuition, fees, housing, and your meal plan.
And proxy access works for housing info, too, if you want someone else to see your housing assignment details.
Yep. When you set up proxy access, you can specifically grant permission for them to view housing information if you choose.
Okay, quick housing quiz. Where do you pay your housing bill? A, Solution Center, B, Registrar, C, President's Office, or D, MyHive Portal?
Still D, MyHive Portal. It's the one-stop shop for billing.
And true or false, setting up proxy access for housing info uses the same steps as setting it up for billing info in MyHive.
That is true. The proxy setup process is consistent for all the areas you can grant access to.
All right, now for the fun part, food, meal plans. We hear the dining hall, Burton Dining Hall, has award-winning chefs.
They do. The university puts a lot of effort into providing good, diverse food options. And there are different types of meal plans to fit different needs.
What kinds of plans are there?
Generally, you'll see plans offering, like, unlimited access to the main dining hall.
Eat as much as you want whenever they're open.
Pretty much. And then there are other plans that work more like a flexible spending account. They come with a certain amount of dining dollars.
Okay. Is there a default plan for students living on campus?
Yes. If you live in the traditional residence halls, places like Tate, Montgomery, Westover, you're typically automatically put on an unlimited meal plan.
Makes sense for dorm life. What about other housing, like the Southside apartments or townhouses?
Students in Southside usually get assigned the Hornet 500 plan automatically. That one comes with a set amount of dining dollars for the semester 500, presumably.
And commuters, students living off campus.
For commuters, meal plans are totally optional. If they want one, they can choose any available plan and pay for it. They can add one anytime, too, just by contacting the Solution Center.
You mentioned dining dollars. What are those exactly? Is it like a debit card?
Sort of, but it's simpler. Think of it as digital currency loaded onto your student ID card. It comes as part of certain meal plans.
Ah, so you just swipe your ID card.
Exactly. You use your student ID to spend your dining dollars at various places on campus.
Where can you use them? Just the main dining hall?
Nope. Quite a few places. Burton Dining Hall, yes, but also the Westover Room, brewed by Mission House Coffee Shop, on Common Grand Cafe, and even the Domino's located over at Rainsford House.
Oh, cool. Even Domino's. So, quick recap. Tate, Montgomery, Westover get the unlimited plan.
Right.
Southside gets the Hornet $500 dining dollars plan. And commuters choose if they want one. What if a student gets assigned a plan, say the unlimited one, but finds they don't eat that much in the dining hall? Can they change it?
Good question. There's usually a window to make changes. You typically have the first 3 weeks of classes each semester to upgrade your meal plan if you find the initial one isn't the right fit. Check with the Solution Center for the exact process, but yes, some flexibility exists early on.
3 weeks to potentially upgrade.
Okay. Yeah.
Meal plan quiz. Which halls automatically get the unlimited meal plan? A, Tate, B, Montgomery, C, Westover, or D, all of the above?
That's D, all of the above. Those traditional halls come with the unlimited plan.
And true or false, you can upgrade your meal plan within the first 3 weeks of the semester.
That is true. There's that initial period to make adjustments.
Okay, last major topic, student employment. Working on campus sounds like a great way to earn money and get experience, right?
It really is. The student employment program is fantastic. You can work in all sorts of departments, dining, groundskeeping, athletics, offices, lots of variety. Are there different kinds of student jobs?
Broadly, yes. There are regular student worker positions, and then there's the federal work study program.
Federal work study. How does that work? Is it different?
It is. Work study is a federally funded program, so eligibility is tied to your financial need, which is determined by your FAFSA.
Ah, so you need to have filed the FAFSA and demonstrated need.
Exactly. And maintain a certain GPA, usually. If you're awarded federal work study as part of your financial aid package, it means you're eligible for specific work study jobs on campus. The pay you earn comes partly from those federal funds.
How do you get paid?
Typically, you get paid by check twice a week, based on the actual hours you work in your work study job.
And the other type, regular student worker jobs.
Those positions aren't tied to federal work study funds or FAFSA need. They're just regular part-time jobs funded by the specific department or office that's hiring.
What are the perks of working on campus, whether it's work study or regular? Big advantages. Convenience is huge. Your job is right there. No commute. Flexibility is another. Campus employers understand you're a student first, so they often work around your class schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And you gain real work experience, build skills, get references. It looks great on a resume.
Definitely. Where do students actually look for these jobs? Is there a job board?
Yes. The main place is the university's website.
Yeah.
You'll want to navigate usually through sections like About Us, then find Human Resources.
Okay, HR section.
Within HR, look for job openings. Now, this is key. Since you're a current student, you want to look for a section specifically for internal candidates or current students' employees. That's where most student positions are listed.
Internal candidates. Got it. What's the application process usually like?
Once you're in that internal career portal, you browse the job listings, find one you like, click on it, and there's usually a button like Start Application or Apply.
Fill out an online form.
Typically, yes. An online application. Some might ask for a resume or CV. Some might not for entry-level spots. But it never hurts to have one ready.
Then submit and wait.
Pretty much. Submit the application, and then the hiring manager for that department will review it and contact you if they want to set up an interview.
And if you get the job.
If you're offered the position, there's some hiring paperwork, tax forms, providing ID, that sort of standard stuff.
What kinds of jobs are common on campus? Can you give some examples?
Oh, lots of things. Office assistants in academic departments or administrative offices are very common.
Okay.
Staff and dining services, library assistants, peer tutors in academic support centers, working at the rec center desk. Really a wide range.
Sounds like lots of options. Is there usually a limit on how many hours students can work?
Yeah, that's a good pro tip to mention. Generally, on-campus student jobs are limited to around 10 hours per week during the academic year.
10 hours a week.
And usually, students can only hold one campus job at a time. Also, always double-check the specific eligibility requirements for any job you apply for, like needing a certain GPA or being enrolled full-time.
Right. Good points. Okay, final quiz round on jobs. Where's the main place to find listings for on-campus jobs? A, the library. B, the university website. C, the Solution Center. Or D, asking professors.
That's B, the university website, through HR and the internal candidates portal.
And true or false? Campus jobs are usually designed to be flexible around your class schedule.
That is true. Flexibility is definitely a key benefit they aim for.
Well, wow. We have definitely covered a lot of ground today unpacking university finances. It might seem like a mountain of information at first glance.
It can feel that way. But the main takeaway, I think, is that you don't have to navigate it alone, and it doesn't need to be overwhelming.
Right.
Remember, there are dedicated people, administrators, advisors, the folks at the Solution Center whose job it is to help you understand everything from grants and scholarships to loans and bills. Don't hesitate to ask questions.
Absolutely. Being proactive is so important too, right? Keeping track of deadlines can save you a lot of headaches later.
Huge. Stay informed, check MyHive, know the dates. It prevents surprises.
And for anyone wanting to dig deeper, the source materials mentioned a ton of great resources.
Yeah, definitely check those out. The Solution Center website, the MyHive portal itself, the Depth of Labor Scholarship Search, info pages on Pell Grants and VTAG, the university's cost and affordability page, the how to pay your bill page, the meal plan options page, the student employment page.
Lots of specific places to get more detail.
We're all there to help you.
So maybe a final thought to leave you with. Looking at all these resources and steps we've discussed, which one feels like the first one you'll explore? What's your next step to really take charge of your university finances?
Because taking that one proactive step, making that first inquiry, or just logging into MyHive with a specific goal, that can really build confidence.
Yeah, it leads to greater peace of mind, doesn't it? And lets you focus on the main event, your learning journey here.